Welcome to Alphabet Scoop episode 119. As always, I'm joined by Kyle Bradshaw and Ben Schoen. This week we talk about Android 12 Developer Preview 3 and what we subsequently learned about the Pixel 5a 5G from it. And then we have a bit of a discussion about wearables.
For better or worse.
For better or worse. So yeah, let's just jump right in. Android Developer Preview 3. It's the last one before we enter the beta period, and we're starting to see some of the big design changes that leaked in February, I believe. Bubbly, that's basically the theme of everything. It's all very bubbly.
Every single thing has rounded corners. Everything. Everything.
It works in some places more than others, and I think the curvature is far too extreme in most places, like dialogue boxes and long press menus. It's too much.
It does kind of feel all at home with the assistant snapshot view, though.
No, it's...
Which has much rounder, it's not, much more rounded corners than Discover, anyway.
It's not that extreme. It's not... I think it's Snapshot. I don't think Snapshot is as extreme as what's going on everywhere in DP3. Okay, where does it make sense? Where do these rounded corners make sense? I think... I'm kind of fine with it in the volume adjuster. I do think it's slightly too thick, but I can make do with it. But again, like those pop-up sheets, those simple pop-up sheets, I think that's too extreme without also needing to like refactor the text inside of it.
Yeah, and like the toasts and things like that too.
It's a mixed bag there.
I think it looks great in the settings menu.
In the settings menu.
Yes.
Which is the very next thing. Yeah. So we've been, people have enabled the redesign of settings long before DP3, but this is much more, but it's now live for everybody. And the first word that comes to mind for me is, it's a mix of playful and childish.
That's a very good way to describe it. With a little bit of One UI mixed in.
Yeah, One UI is the main thing I get.
I think it looks, I like the look of it. It is, it's clean and easy to understand.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Totally.
I think it can. It could definitely do with some, which I know Abner has feelings about, some density improvements and just putting information back. Like in previous versions of Android, you'd have like the battery percentage just visible in the settings menu, and maybe a connected device or a network or something like that would just be shown in the settings menu, and now it's not.
Yeah.
But overall, I think it's a nice redesign that kind of gives it a little bit of life.
Yeah, it does give it some life. And as to what you were saying, I just think the text is way too large. I'm fine with the icons. I'm not crazy about the One UI thing, and also, of course, iOS thing of having thick headers. I don't see the benefit of that. Ben, you've used Samsung phones for quite a bit.
The benefit of that practice in One UI is that you have this huge phone, and by default, the content have this big, gigantic header at the top. It pushes all the touch targets to the bottom. But then if you want to use the whole screen space, you just swipe up a little bit and then it resizes to a traditional way. And that works great. That is somewhat present in the settings or design. It's not always the case. Personally, it's something I have come to really like, but it is also something that cannot be... It is not effective on a pixel, because all the pixels are pretty small now. Like, on a 6.8-inch Galaxy S21 Ultra, One UI's gigantic headers are great and constantly appreciated. On a 6-inch pixel or a 5.5-inch 4A, it is a waste of space on an otherwise relatively small screen.
At the same time, though, it kind of feels like this is something that's not just happening for pixels, but it seems like this is happening to material, which should mean that it pushes more broadly out into the Android space.
Yes, which is what makes it worth it. So I like it less on a small phone, but I'll take it just because it means that everyone's going to do this. And it is a good thing.
The question, like, of everyone, though, it's like, everyone.
That's true. Everyone's already done it.
And everyone is just Samsung. In the Android land. That's, I guess, Google is moving its third-party apps closer to what Samsung's ideal is. But again, like you were saying, on the Pixel phones, I'm not sold on this being useful. It looks nice, but functionally, having to like swipe up a little to go back to a old view, it looks nice, but I don't think it functionally serves a significant purpose yet. And I am curious to hear how they explain it, how the material team explains it, and whether they echo the same arguments as Samsung with One UI.
I would think they probably will, and like I said, I think it's worth it overall, just because it, even on a smaller pixel, it is going to be useful once in a while. And also, Google's version is much less extreme than Samsung's. Some Samsung apps, they'll push literally half of the screen will be just the header, like the messaging app. It's half the screen is just the word messages,
yeah,
and then everything else is down below it. Like Google's is maybe, what, the first third, if that, is the header? Not even that. Maybe the first quarter of the screen is the header.
Yeah, when it gets to third-party apps and presumably what Google's next design language is going to be, there will be a lot of thought into how apps apply this, and that'll start the cycle for a few years of people updating their apps, I'm sure. But yeah, the settings menu is the start of that for the system. And the other big thing, the other big design change that you can't necessarily see, but you feel, is this new bounce animation.
Oh, no. It's visible. It is constantly visible. It is all I see. Oh my God. No, what they did, it's not even a bounce animation. Okay. On Android 11, when you scroll a list, it would kind of like bounce. Now it doesn't bounce. Now it stretches, which looks absolutely strange and kind of made me sick the first couple times I tried it. It's really gross and I do not like it.
Yeah, I don't like it when... Okay, not all pages are long, like an email is pretty short, and it the jiggle, the effect just looks that stretchy. When it actually stretches text, that looks horrible.
Ugh. And it's especially noticeable in apps where you need to pull to refresh.
Ooh,
so, I like, instead of just pulling something down, you're stretching the page down, and it.
What apps? Twitter.
Twitter's one. Yeah, oh, I want to say Gmail too.
Really?
I haven't tried it in a while. Yeah. Oh no, it doesn't. It doesn't happen in Gmail though. Go figure.
I would assume that's not the intended behavior.
Hopefully. Yeah, considering it doesn't happen in Gmail, that's probably the case.
Mm. Yeah, so why did they do this? Why do we think they did this?
I really could... Okay, when it's working the way that it's supposed to be working, it can be delightful. But it's very clearly broken right now.
Yes. Yeah, it's... How exactly is it broken? What do we think they'll refine? They'll reduce how much everything stretches? What do we think? What's a better state of this?
Maybe not letting something stretch if you're already at the top of it.
That's something. So they want to convey motion, right? Is that... Again, until they explain it, I'm having a hard time understanding the rationale for all this. It's new, and is it just that it's new? It's really hard to perceive.
I mean, it's essentially what iOS does. It's just uglier.
Yeah.
Like iOS, everything overscrolls and bounces, but...
Yeah, it never affects the content itself.
Yeah, it's like instead of...
Better there.
Yeah, on iOS, instead of stretching the content, it just creates blank space. Which works. I don't know. I'd just rather it... Like, the bounce at the end is fine, but the stretching is overkill.
Yeah, it is.
Like, I like the bounce animation when it hit, like, when it hits the bottom of a list. It's nice to, like, it kind of bounces just for a second. That's fine.
It's a ripple, really.
It's just that when, like, if you slowly stretch your finger across the screen, the whole screen stretches, and that's weird. And
it is.
No, don't do that. I don't know. It's hard to describe this.
Yeah. I know there are, again, combined with the bubbly corners everywhere and all that, I think it makes it'll be, well, definitely be more polished once they can update everything to look the same, because right now we're in a real mixed metaphors kind of approach to OS, as is typical with developer previews. But right now it looks really rough. And it's curious that Google's already introducing some of those design changes now. Elsewhere, widgets get revamped. widgets get revamped. Kyle, you noticed what they're doing with corners.
Yeah, what happened... one of my most commonly used widgets is the Google Keep widget, which goes on it just goes on my second page, and it takes up the whole page because I want to just be able to look at it real quick. And oh god, the ripples there too. normally that widget has very sharp corners. It's just a rectangle, and it just goes wherever you put it. But in Android 12 Developer Preview 3, they gave it rounded corners. They forced rounded corners onto it. But they did it in a way that looks strange. So it kind of has a jagged edge to it, because this widget normally just goes edge to edge wherever you put it. But on other widgets that are rectangles, like the Gmail widget, it looks good. It looks like it's supposed to look like that. It's an interesting change. I'm not... That's the most like forceful change, the most noticeable change to people who just use widgets on a daily basis. But if you're... The other change is that they added a new menu for 4 widgets, which you're not going to see all that often, because people don't add widgets to their home screen very often. They'll set it up and they'll forget about it. But they put a new one in, so you can search for widgets, and it gives you recommendations and everything. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
It's a nice little experience that it really needed.
The design changes for widgets is complete. That entire experience has been overhauled, and it looks very nice, and it works. Hopefully everything else is more in that vein, because right now it's just a bit everywhere. So you can't really judge it. But yet here we are, because some of it is really unpolished.
I'll say it's nice that Android's given a little, or Google's given a little love to a feature that people are loving on iOS right now, but Android's had for a long time, and it's just not gotten any love.
Yeah, I wonder what developers want, Android developers functionally want on the widgets. If anything, I would imagine that future versions of Android try to add more restrictions, so to speak, in the name of performance on widgets. A template style in the vein of iOS. But yeah, I feel like we would, if they plan to do a big widgets functional overhaul, I feel like we would have seen it by now. But it's probably too late for them to get into Android 12.
Yeah, we definitely would have seen that by now, whether in leaks or something.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, this also you have also gotten the conversations widget.
Yeah, I want to like it, and I think I will like it in time. It just needs a pinch of work. It uses your notifications, so you get to pick from a list of notifications you've gotten recently, and you get to just kind of monitor when the last time you talk to somebody is, or even show the most recent notification from them if you have an unread one. It seems cool in theory, and I'm excited to see if it works well in practice.
Yeah, because from an early, conceptual look at it, this feels like this year's Bubbles. Because I'm not sure if people will adopt it or if people even like it. In terms of, this is clearly part of their conversations approach that they touted with Android 11 last year, people focus. But yeah, I'm curious whether people will want to make space for, widgets are big, let's get that out of the way. Whether they want to disrupt their home screen for a conversations widget or multiple.
Yeah, especially considering to get the most out of one of these widgets, you probably want something bigger than the default 2x2 size. Because just by default in the 2x2, you get someone's name and their picture, if you have one. If you go a little bit bigger, you get how long ago they messaged, and then a little bit bigger, you can even see their message, if there is one.
Yeah. This whole people focus and conversation focus, which Google has correctly identified, is something that people do a lot of on their phones, obviously. But I wonder if they're going to continue trying until they probably land something. But after Bubbles, which I don't know if a lot of people are using, and however conversations works, I wonder if they're going to eventually realize that if they want to revamp the notifications experience, they should just leave in the notification shade, and I don't know what that looks like. But maybe they'll just, next year's thing will be to providing a really good conversations experience in the notification shade.
That feels like what they've already been doing, though. Like they already divided it up into silent alerting and conversations, and now this
smart
conversations widget, yeah, smart replies. This conversations widget just builds on that work too, because I'm pretty sure that only apps that file themselves under conversations show up in the conversations widget.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm imagining like a full conversations widget inside the notification shade. I don't know. It's wishful thinking. But I don't know if that's how they eventually decide to do it.
Genuinely don't know.
Yeah. Let's see. Splash screens. That's a big thing. I think they're wholly unnecessary in that they take too much time, because I definitely see it for a split second, and I'm not sure whether that's an artificial delay for me pressing the app icon and then opening the app, or whether the system generally needs that time to load everything. But it seems superfluous at this point.
Well, what I saw when I was testing it out yesterday was that it is based on while the app is loading. Because, I opened up Chrome, which takes a second.
Yeah.
If it's the first time you're opening it. And, yeah, it shows the splash screen for a couple of seconds until it loads up either the tab or just the app as a whole. And then like another app, like Google Voice, which takes no time at all to open. It showed the splash screen for probably half a second.
Even that half second is annoying to me, though.
It takes me out of it.
It feels like an extra step rather than this is the part of the process of launching the app.
I think it's the equivalent of looking at a loading screen. So I think it looks nice now, and it's nice that it's going to be at least uniform. Like now it's all in. So the change in Android 12 DP3 is that the splash screen is now a part of Android, basically, and every app is going to get a splash screen generated from its icon. It's kind of messy right now because it also replaces ones that already exist, but when it's done, it'll look nice.
Yeah. Again, what do you think of it, Kyle?
I'm back and forth on it. It's going to be tricky because there's more than one way to make an Android app now. Like, I'm noticing that a lot of Flutter apps have a splash screen when they load, and then another splash screen now from Android. Like, if I force close Stadia and open it, I see two splash screens. There's one from Android and there's one from Stadia. So it's going to be tricky for Google to figure out the best way to do this and for that to trickle downstream to developers to start using the right way. Because as I recall, when they announced it or when they explained it, they said that developers would be able to implement their own animations even in that screen.
Yeah, in place of the app icon specifically, they could have a custom animation, which that would be delightful. It reminds me of like when you're loading Gmail on the web for the first time. There's the M icon animates out into the logo. So that could be something delightful there.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah, those are the big changes. How's performance for everyone? I think there's a slight regression in terms of stability and lack of bugs, which makes sense given the stuff they've added.
Yeah, I'll say the biggest noticeable thing for me is that if there's like a video in Google Discover and then I swipe away Google Discover, the video will like hang on screen for an extra half second or a couple frames anyway.
Do you keep autoplay on?
On Google Discover? I didn't know that was a thing I could turn off.
You keep autoplay on? How dare you?
I didn't know you could turn that off in Discover.
Well, I've never seen it live.
I've never used it either.
That has to be investigated immediately because autoplay is.
This feels like something that's been there for months and months and months.
Yeah,
autoplay only on Wi-Fi.
Yes, autoplay video previews on the Google App General Settings.
Well, I will change that right now.
So yeah, buggy. It's not like it's not crash. The phone isn't crashing, or the days of your phone getting hot when running a developer preview aren't a thing anymore yet, and it'll presumably become more stable as we get into beta 1. But I'm definitely waiting for the next patch in the meantime because it's not as smooth as it was before.
I'm hoping that beta 1 should be the ticket just because it's supposed to be for the public, not just for developers at that point.
Honestly, I'm surprised they didn't show off more design changes in developer preview 3 because I assume they need to iron out that performance stuff, assuming that that beta 1 is going to do everything, that they're going to, I don't know, home screen, notification shade, quick settings, that kind of stuff. Assuming they do that, it's, I don't know, kind of bold that they're not deciding to preview that first and give it to a few thousand people to report bugs.
nope, just going to do it live and see how it goes, right? I mean, I think they're probably just doing it for the big I.O. moment.
Yeah, they absolutely want the moment for that. So yeah, that is Android 12 for now. As we were saying, the beta is next, and along with I.O., that's going to be a big moment. And we can't wait to cover that. Before we talk about other stories, a word from our sponsor. This week's episode of Alphabet Scoop is brought to you by NVIDIA's GeForce Now. With GeForce Now, you can stream nearly any laptop, desktop, Mac, Chromebook, NVIDIA Shield TV, Android device, iPhone, or iPad into an instant PC gaming rig when you feel that urge to play and immerse yourself in a new or familiar world. With instant installs and no driver downloads, you can start gaming faster. GeForce Now is powered by NVIDIA's best-in-class GPUs and next-gen technology. You can access the most demanding PC titles and seamlessly play with whatever device is nearest to you. Connect to your supported store of choice and stream your library. Since you're making purchases on your personal account, like Steam or the Epic Games Store, those titles will always stay with you. Join GeForce Now and start playing for free, or upgrade your membership for faster access to cloud gaming servers, extended gameplay sessions, and RTX graphics featuring ray tracing and DLSS tech. And just before the weekend, check back weekly for GFN Thursday, NVIDIA's celebration of the newest games and features streaming from the cloud to you. Head to geforcenow.com/9to5Google or hit the link in the show notes to check out GeForce Now. Our thanks to GeForce Now for sponsoring. So, Android 12, DP3, it told us something else about the Pixel 5a 5G.
Yeah, so as our wonderful colleague Dylan dug into DP3 using, checking for the various code names that we're aware of, we got a wonderful hit on the code name Barbit, which is we know to be the Pixel 5a 5G, which is its official name from Google as of this month. We found out that is connected to a model number, which is connected to basically the Qualcomm Snapdragon 765G, the exact same chip that's in the Pixel 5 and the Pixel 4a 5G.
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So the reasons for Google keeping the same chip: they already have experience with the chip. They don't have to spend time developing Android around and the Pixel experience around a new processor. And in terms of where the pricing lands, if it's cheaper in the like an A series phone, end users will get a pretty good value out of it. But on the other side, why are they doing this?
It would be easier, I would imagine, to just give a price drop to the Pixel 4a 5G. Because from everything that we've seen so far, which, I mean, specs are limited, but it seems like it's the same phone, give or take a couple millimeters.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, is it the playbook that you need a new, that people understand that something's a few months old and they need the newest thing? They need, yeah, that they need a new thing? Or I don't know. It's, again, it's odd. Why, if the Pixel 5a 5G generally does not do anything different, its existence is baffling.
I mean, the only thing that I've seen that made any kind of sense is that maybe Google's doing this for the carriers. But even that argument seems weak.
That they need an even... Again, it comes with price.
Well, the carrier argument makes sense just because the carriers do want to sell the latest thing. And effectively selling a year old phone is not the, it's not that it's a bad look. It's just not the look that people are used to on the Android side of things.
But it's only six months old, you know?
The 5G is only 6 months old.
Very different.
Yeah, but it was a 2020 phone. So that's all it comes down to, unfortunately. Yeah, I would say the carrier argument makes a lot of sense. But, you know, the other argument is that if they're using an older chip, that means it's technically costing them a little bit less, which means, hey, we might be getting the best of the 4A 5G for a price that's a lot closer to the 4A. So that's nothing to complain about.
It's something that is honestly one of the better reasons for this phone's existence. Didn't Samsung once basically rebrand the phone or something? They took an old phone and gave it a new branding? Like, a very long time ago. Like, they gave it, like, a new model year or something?
Yeah, they've done that they've done that pretty recently, actually, with A-series phones. But usually that's a new chip or something like that, and that's not what we're seeing here. So it really does, the question really becomes, is there anything new that's not just on the spec sheet? Like, is it a new,
that I don't know, are they brought to older devices? That's the big thing. That's the baffling thing.
The things that it could that could include might be they improve the water resistance, or
that adds to the price and detracts from its ability to be a 5A.
Yeah, there's probably one thing that does justify its existence that we just can't see yet, but it's hard to know what that thing will be.
Yeah, but I mean, whatever it is, it's going to have to be ported to the Pixel 5 and the Pixel 4a 5G, because it doesn't make sense that the more expensive phones can't do what the cheaper phone can do.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, this is launching on Android 11. It will be one of the last phones to launch on Android 11. So
the last phone's from Google anyway.
Last phone's from Google anyways. Yeah, it's again, we got to this week, we got a key part of the picture, and that's something, I guess.
A key part that makes it just that much more confusing.
Yeah.
Because, it would make sense if they had upgraded to, the 768, which is, you know, a 765, but it's a little faster.
But then,
what's the other one?
If they did that, then the Pixel 5a would have better performance than the Pixel 5.
Yeah, which is insane. It's a very confusing phone until it's not, which is basically going to be when we find out what this one thing is.
Then it stops becoming confusing. It possibly becomes a baffling idea.
Yeah, or it's just there is no one thing and they're just releasing it, and then it's, what's the point?
It'll be the oddest phone released. It'll be a collector's item in the US and Japan.
You know what? Give it a good color and it'll sell.
Just going to be available in black. Green.
That's the reason it exists, to make a red one or something like that.
It's going to be one color for a few months. We all know that.
I mean, that wasn't the goal with the 4A. That just kind of happened.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot of production issues last year, where right now we just have chip issues. I think they could handle black or plastic exteriors this year.
Famous fast words.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the Pixel. In other Google hardware, which now includes Fitbit, Fitbit announced a new fitness tracker, the Fitbit Lux, which used to be, Lux was the thing reserved for special fancy accessories. And yeah, $150. It's the first, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first Fitbit announced after the Google acquisition, right? Because the Ace 3?
It was a couple months after. It was like a month ago.
Yeah, okay.
It was after, but that one had already like leaked before the acquisition was finalized. So this is the first one that like we heard of it, and then it came out under Google's name. Yes. And it was also the first one mentioned on the Google blog.
Indeed it was. It leaked the week before, and I'm not sure if that influenced them announcing so early, because there was relatively no launch cycle around this phone. Sorry, around this tracker. And we don't even know the launch date.
Well, we do know it's next month.
Next month, okay.
Because they mentioned May for all of the accessories. So it is next month.
Yes. And the accessories. We'll get into that.
Raises a question. Do you think that Fitbit's going to be at I.O.?
That would be interesting. That would...
That would be very interesting. They do have a developer platform, kind of.
And they could show off the Lux right alongside the 5A, 5G, potentially.
Yeah, they could do something. I'd be curious. But yeah, the Lux is a fitness tracker in the vein of the Inspire series, but with premium materials, stainless steel, metal injection molding for a bulbous jewelry-like design is the thing they're aiming for.
It looks very nice.
There are three colors, two of them, soft gold and platinum. It's a high polish mirror finish, so that's a nice and shiny thing. It's very clear the market they're going for, as they are hyping up an even easier quick release band mechanism. And there are so many bands that they're going for. Just so many bands. $150. Functionally, it will be able to measure SpO2, oxygen saturation, though that's not coming at launch. It has a heart rate sensor, active zone minutes, cardio fitness score, support for sleep stages. It's water resistant up to 50 meters, but there's no built-in GPS. So you have to have your phone with you.
But probably most importantly, it has a color display, which is a first for Fitbit fitness trackers, if I'm correct there.
Yes, it is absolutely a first.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Fitbit says it's 2 times brighter than Inspire 2 or Charge 4, which had this like off-white blue color, which is meh. Mm-hmm. Just a classic, a staple of everything else. I am honestly surprised they did this. They did a color tracker before they did an e-ink one.
I don't know. I think this feels more in line with the smartwatches they're pushing. The advantage of going e-ink would be, it would be battery life and it would be sunlight visibility.
Yes. And an always-on display, which we currently don't think the Lux has.
It definitely does not. There's no way they could manage that on such a tiny battery. The thing is so small. There's no way they could manage that. It would have like 1 day battery, if that.
I might take that, actually. I just want... Okay, so the only company that has a fitness tracker with an always-on display that's kind of like e-ink... It's not e-ink. It's like the old digital watches. Is Garmin. They have one or two that have it always on display, and nobody else does it. I think people like the idea of a thin... would like the idea of a thin fitness tracker with an always on screen, and nobody is doing that.
I don't disagree completely. Like, I do think people would like it, but I don't know if it's the thing that people need on a fitness tracker. Because on a fitness tracker, yes, it is good for notifications and seeing the time and all that stuff, but it's not its first priority. Its first priority is tracking. And, well, granted, the color screen takes away from that a little bit. I don't know. I don't know if the demand is really there.
That's fair.
For an always-on display on a fitness tracker. It's definitely there on a watch.
Yes. Okay.
I feel like it's not as necessary on a fitness tracker just because of the fact that it's so aware of what you're doing that the gesture to raise it up and look at it is so much more, or should be, so much more accurate. You shouldn't need always on. It should just coincidentally always be on when you're looking at it.
So, yeah, so a tracker, it's 100%, this is a tracker. This is a fitness tracker. But the way they are pushing this into like a jewelry-like design or this lifestyle product where you wear all the time and you switch the bands out as you go from activity to activity. So the thing about an always-on display is until you live with it, you don't conceptualize how useful it is to have to not have to raise your arm to be always on. There is an extreme convenience, and I know everybody has, they obviously have their phones on them, but the idea of having a dedicated thing that tells the time is useful beyond imagination. And I think people would really appreciate that, the idea of like a simple device that just shows time. There would be immense value there.
That value is there at the cost of battery life, though. Like, I don't know how it is for all watches, but I turn off always on display on my Wear OS watch, and it lasts twice as long.
Yeah, no, it's that. Abner's argument is basically to use e-ink or a similar technology to avoid that problem.
Okay. Yeah.
Which, again, I don't disagree with you that people would enjoy it, and it is a feature that some people actually do want. But I don't think the majority of people who are buying a fitness tracker want to see the time constantly. They just want it to track their data.
Looking at Fitbit's lineup, it is surprising to me that their first tracker with a color display isn't the larger Charge series of devices. That could definitely... Okay, if you are putting a color display for whatever reason, a high-res display would absolutely benefit, like the Charge series tracker, which is twice as wide, and you can show more information. So, again, I know they're calling it a fitness tracker, but the way they're advertising it to me seems like it's trying to be more mainstream. And I think if they're trying to do a more mainstream device, I think they would have benefited from AOD and putting more focused on just like a regular dumb smartwatch rather than a dumber, less capable smartwatch, instead of making a souped up fitness tracker.
I do think there are people who want a souped up fitness tracker, though. Like, I mean, for example, I'll use the example of my wife. She uses a Fitbit Sense and she loves it. Mm-hmm. But she has said to me on multiple occasions, it's a little too big. This is exactly what she wants. And this is, I'm gonna give her one once it comes out. Because it's tiny, but it has it looks nice enough to double as a watch, but it bridges the gap. That's what I keep coming back to. I don't disagree with you. Always on display would be nice, but the color display and just the nicer design does it. It feels appropriate as a product in their lineup. Like, it does serve a need that it wasn't before. The Inspire 2 and the Charge 4 are functionally great, but they're kind of ugly.
Except functionally great. The Charge is horrific on the Inspire 2. That's neither here nor there.
Okay, in my defense, I used the Charge 4 for a total of 25 minutes.
Yeah, the Charge 4 is fine. Charge 2. Sorry, Inspire 2. For one thing, they need... I have all the Fitbits. That's one. And they all have different chargers. And I thought that Yeah, I don't want to go into this right now. The Inspire 2 has a horrible charger. Those crypts look like it would break.
Yes, it does. I do agree with that.
So,
yes.
I just want to revisit the point that you said about this being something that's more mainstream. I don't think I can agree with you on that, because there are other trackers that do this. Like, the Galaxy Fit 2 does almost everything that this does except connect to Fitbit, and cost less than half the price. That's mainstream. This is luxury. It's right in
the middle. I agree. This is the wearable that it's not just a fitness tracker, because it looks nicer, but it's not a smartwatch because it's not big. And again, I think there's demand for that. It's not. Yeah, I think mainstream might be the wrong word. It's more, it's not niche either. It's just, it is filling a need that I don't know if anyone else is filling it. I don't follow the fitness trackers as closely as I should, but I think this is one of the nicest looking fitness trackers, and I can't wait to try it.
And when I say mainstream, fitness trackers, people, I would not be surprised if the majority of people bought like a super old one a few years ago and never found any functionality out of it. It's in their drawer. After that experience, they buy another one a few years later thinking it might have improved the experience, but it hasn't. To Fitbit's credit, the screen and that nice design tries to break the cycle. But I think if that's the audience they're trying to get, the repeat fitness tracker buyer that they've failed to stick with the device, I think they need more functionality. And to me, that big functionality, that big usefulness it could deliver is the screen. But in terms of mainstream, I think there is. Yeah, 150 is definitely way more expensive than the Fit.
The Galaxy Fit, the Mi Band, the
Mi Band, yeah. Yeah, those devices. And I think the Fit 2 was discounted to like $30 over the weekend on Amazon or something.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to get one, but it went back to $49 already. But yeah, I think, that there is mainstream, but there is also premium that 150 is still low enough. It's still over the holidays, it'll probably discount to like 129 area, if not cheaper. I think this is being set up for a mainstream, more mainstream than any of the previous fitness trackers, which carry the connotation of fitness, obviously.
I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the Fitbit Lux next month, hopefully, sooner than later. And we're going to end on a review we just published Thursday. Ben had some time with the OnePlus Watch.
It's a train wreck. It has... Okay, hardware is very good. I like the stainless steel build. It's, you know, it's too big for a lot of people, and there's no smaller one. Yep, the bezel is very, it's very subtle, but it's very nice. The band is comfortable. The battery life is awesome. I charged it on the 8th, and it died 2 days ago. The 20th? So, great battery life. The software is really, really bad. It's fast, but it is full of bugs. It does track your sleep, but then it doesn't do anything with that information. It's inaccurate with workouts and steps, and it's just a mess. There's no third-party apps. There's no third-party watch faces. There's no way for that to ever happen unless OnePlus puts in a whole lot of work, which I doubt that they will. Yeah, I put like 3,000 words into the review just explaining why it's bad. Hopefully updates will make it usable to someone. But right now it is a product that, for the first time I ever said, not a single person should buy this right now.
Oof.
So, it's a train wreck. You could do better with literally a used Wear OS watch that you bought for $100.
Oh, you can get them less than that. Come on. Like the Fossil, yeah.
Discounts so often. Yeah.
That Misfit that they did, then was it $35 or something?
There was $15.
Somebody got that deal.
I got that deal. I never even turned it on.
Ooh, that's ouch.
But yeah, no, the OnePlus Watch is a highly anticipated product that is a failure across the board.
OnePlus 1000% played into the will they won't they of whether it'll have Wear OS. They definitely benefited to that. And it's kind of annoying.
They did an interview before launch where they were teasing how they were working with Google, and then a day later told everyone to change their headlines so it didn't say the OnePlus Watch is coming with Wear OS. It was all ridiculous.
They're working with Google to learn how best to copy the interface.
Honestly, the marketing strategy for this, it's been overhyped because it's their fault. It's 100% their fault.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't find the quote, but I do recall a quote where they said that they've been working on it for over a year and they've been working to perfect it, and that's why it was delayed and took so long. But then it just comes out with unfinished, sloppy software. I mean, I keep coming back to my favorite example. When it hit my daily step count, it said, your step is up to standard. Please keep it up, but please PLS.
Please keep it up. Please, please.
Like I said, it is the first product I have ever said that not a single person should buy.
So what is like the most charitable explanation on that Wear OS quote? What did they try something and gave up? Could this hardware support Wear OS?
No, current state, absolutely not. At one point, I'm sure they were working on like some version of Wear OS, maybe customized like Oppo does. But yeah, no, what ended up happening is a watch that said, we want 2 weeks of battery life, and I don't care what you do to get there. And that is a bad way to develop a smartwatch.
Yep.
So yeah, I'll leave it on that. You can go read the review on 95google.com.
Yep. Well, we should have ended on a more
positive
note. Positive note, but here we are.
No, it's still positive because instead you can just go buy a Fitbit.
Yeah. Oh, tell the audience what your next project is. Your lateral move is.
Oh, sometime this week or next, I'll have a quick hands-on with the $20 Wise watch.
Oof. Watch it be better.
These are getting too cheap. They're too cheap. Uncomfortably cheap.
That's an argument for another day.
Yeah. So with that, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast and publish on Thursdays. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, iTunes, and Apple Podcasts. And you can even listen on our site at 9to5google.com. Thank you for tuning in, and thanks to Kyle and Ben for joining me. We'll all see you next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.